Officially, then, this is the beginning of Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 124E. We're on page 487. We've been discussing the three constellational rulers of cosmic decanates in a zodiac of 10, or at least a greater zodiac than our zodiac. And these are Taurus, Scorpio, and Pisces. We've been discussing the great sons of God, human beings associated with these three ruling constellations. The Buddha, the Buddha for Ray 3, and Taurus, the Christ for Ray 2, and Pisces, Hercules for Ray 1, and Scorpio. We've also been looking at these three constellations as if they were cosmic decanates, which is a little harder prospect than what I think they might be, is the most influential constellations within certain cosmic decanates, which are comprised of more than one constellation. And I've suggested that maybe the decanates, cosmic decanates in our zodiac, of which we presume there are three, can be grouped in terms of the cardinal constellations, the fixed constellations, and the mutable constellations. And it does leave one problem, of course, because we have, of the three ruling constellations, none of them is cardinal. So cannot be part of such a grouping. Two of them can only be part of the secondary grouping, which connects to a fixed cross and which connects with the second ray. And we're told something interesting here, that where are we told that? The emphasis, we're in a second ray solar system, and hence the importance of Scorpio, Taurus, and Pisces. Well, we offered a one explanation of that, but it's also possible that since we're emphasizing in a sort of second aspect cosmic decanate composed of fixed signs or fixed constellations, the Scorpio and Taurus are very much a part of that second aspect. Pisces, somehow part of the mutable constellations, and therefore in general related to the third aspect, even though Pisces brings in strong second ray and so forth. It's a tangle, you know. If we can't if we cannot untangle yet the mystery of the solar angels, which is much closer to home, I wonder how we can disentangle some of this constellational lore. But anyway, there is a triangle of initiation here with these three constellations, and they are of paramount potency in the initiation process. Why? What do we need? Strength, illumination, and love. We need strength is the first aspect, illumination the third, love is the second. We need these three. We need these three as we advance in our initiation process. And that's what we get. We get illumination first, love second, and strength finally third. Depending, I suppose, upon what monadic ray, as maybe first ray monads develop strength sooner and third ray monads illumination sooner and second ray monads love sooner than the other types. So they are very important in the initiation process, and they allow us through struggle to attain illumination, and through illumination to have the wisdom which reveals the way to salvation through love, which Pisces distributes. But let's not forget also the pervasive wisdom of Pisces. So many different things are said of all of these constellations and their lords. If you say it of a constellation, you're really saying it of a lord of the constellation. Just the way so many things are said of our tiny planetary logos of the Earth, a great being compared to us, microscopic man. So many qualities are here, and all the qualities are going to be found in these great systems. But, you know, the further away you get from something, the lesser qualities begin to disappear, and you only see the main themes. And thus it is, when we look at a particular constellation, we only see it so far away, in a sense, or vibratorily so remote from us, that we only see the main themes, even though all of the seven qualities have to be represented. If they are represented on Earth by seven spirits before the throne of our planetary logos, and there are seven Raylors right here on the Earth, you can be sure that in a solar logos there will be seven Raylords who will be planetary lords, and in a cosmic logos there will be seven Raylords who are stellar lords, and in a one about whom naught may be said, there will be seven Raylords who are constellational lords. And all of these constellations, like the whole zodiac or Orion or Little Bear or whatever, they are all cosmic logoi, whose parts are solar systems. Solar system generally defined as one sun and perhaps its planets, and maybe possibly defined there may be dual solar systems. But beyond that, we might be talking about a constellation. So every one of these constellations will have all the seven aspects. I mean, you know, you just have to look at the structure. Whoop, that's not it. There it is. You just have to look at the structure of a kind of a cosmic parabrahm. There, this one, you know, parabrahm, it says. Well, parabrahm up to a point, you know, as much a parabrahm as we can fashion, but, you know, there's some kind of being there that's supposed to be a lot greater than anything we're talking about. And there are seven spirits before the throne, aren't there? Seven spirits before the throne. So every one of these beings will have sevenfold aspect. But the farther you are vibratorily from such beings, the more the major aspects which animate them will stand out to you, almost to the point that when you get far enough away from a planet like the Earth, if you're out there, maybe only the third ray will show, even though it has all seven. Maybe some flickering of the second ray as the second ray soul of the Earth comes into expression. So there's a great relativity operating here. And it just depends how vibratorily close we are to any particular being. That will determine what we perceive of that being. Otherwise, just the generalities will be available to us, even though there are many specifics along all the ray lines. We're told here that Leo appears again in this world situation as part of a triangle of crisis. Well, we've had seven signs or constellations, which on page 472, I think, have given us seven crises. Leo was included. Libra was not, and Capricorn was. So now, interestingly, here in this triangle of crisis, Libra is included. And you can generally see the movement. The combination of these three constellations inevitably produce crisis. Now, what's interesting here is when you consider both Libra and Capricorn, they have the same rulers, Venus and Saturn, with an additional Uranus, all hard-line rulers. And Leo is ruled by the second ray sun, but more specifically by maybe sun veiling Jupiter, exoterically sun veiling Neptune, esoterically sun veiling Uranus, hierarchically. So in the, let's see if we just go to that, just to refresh our memory. We're in esoteric astrology, and we would go to 472, and these are the crises of the soul, and there they are. And notice there is no Libra. There is a Capricorn, there is a Leo. These are the crises of the soul for all human beings, for man considered in the mass. And there are early crises, middle crises, and later crises. The early crisis is cancer and individualization. Everybody goes through it. And then reversal, some people are going through it. Following the reversal, there will be various crises involving the initiation into the fifth kingdom of nature and the conflict of the second degree and the expansion of the third initiation and the renunciation of the fourth initiation and the burning ground of the fifth initiation. So it's really, in a way, divided into three parts: the average man, the disciple or aspirant who is reversing, and then the disciple initiate in the last five phases. Because if you really look at the last five of these seven crises, they do precisely concern initiation as a crisis. And we really have the five initiations listed here. But Libra is not part of it, and maybe even Leo. And Capricorn will be assigned different functions in this crisis. But if they are in this grouping. But if they invariably produce crisis, let's see why. Leo, when dominating the triangle, produced in the past the crisis of individualization. Remember that Cancer was assigned to individualization in the table of seven crises applying generally to humanity. But okay, individualization is there, and there's kind of a crisis, I'd call it, of individuation. When the human being comes to himself as a unique human being, a true individual in the lower sense. Later in human history, when the point of balance was reached, Leo was again potent. HBB pointed out that there came a time when the balance was reached between spirit and matter, and from that time on, the tendency of humanity was towards evolution and out of matter, and not involution into matter, and perhaps could this have occurred in the fourth root race? Could this have occurred in the fourth root race when the possibility of initiation was introduced? Well, you think about the pairs of opposites and point of balance which has to be reached on the astral plane when desire moves towards something higher compared with something lower. Here we're taking the broad historical sweep, with Leo so involved in simply producing elementary self-consciousness through the stimulation of the mental unit and the implantation of the spark of mind for those of this earth chain humanity who came into the fourth kingdom in that way. So there seems to be something toward the rising of humanity, which occurred in Atlantis, which was a time of equilibrization. Many people are Atlantean in their nature, and still Atlantean, and are trying to decide which way to go on the basis of desire, just the way it may have been in Atlantean times. Others are Aryan in their consciousness and are trying to actually decide mentally which way to go. Well, Libra could be involved in either one, the choice related to desire or the choice determined by thought. In fact, Libra is a very mental sign, ruling supermind, which is ruled by Saturn, which is, Saturn is the planet of decision. So this has become, humanity turned towards the path of return and not the path of outgoing. In other words, humanity became the world aspirant. Whoop. And today, according to the Tibetan, is the world disciple. And often, and soon, in terms of at least the higher brackets of humanity, will be the world initiate of the first degree. Not yet. When the Christ returns, when the Christ reappears. So at some point, maybe, could it have been, could this point have been the four of four, the fourth sub-race of the fourth root race? Could that have been the case? It would seem to be a tipping point. And no matter what terrible things have happened along the way and periodic regressions, the general upward trend has been there ever since humanity went into the mental polarization and could contact in its upper brackets the soul in a conscious way. Discipleship became possible for humanity as a whole. So I'd consult with Philip Lindsay on this as to how, whether he thinks the four of four was a Libran turning point, at least in terms of desire. Today, Capricorn is producing the third crisis. So let's just say each of these signs represents some sort of crisis. Becoming an individual being, and then the crisis of that of decision, you know, with a Libra. In a large sense, Libra rules for all of humanity the crisis of decision. Which way do we go? Towards materiality and form, or towards soul and spirit? That's the second crisis. Today, Capricorn is producing a third crisis in the long, 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 long what? Let's get there. In the long, long history of mankind, a crisis of initiation. Okay. To see whether we can really enter the fifth kingdom of nature and not just remain in the fourth, whether we can reject rulership by the elemental lords. Can we reject rulership by the personality elementals? No. Elementals, ELMS. And the possibility of this crisis proving effective and producing the appearance of a new kingdom of nature on Earth, because the kingdom already exists, of course. It's just a question of can it be actually embodied in the form. That form doesn't have to change in its basic outlines. It can be the medium of expression for the fifth kingdom, the sixth kingdom. We've been told because we're in the fourth round, the form has developed in the human kingdom, the fourth, sufficiently to express the higher kingdoms through that form. And the possibility of this crisis proving effective and producing the appearance of a new kingdom of nature on Earth is steadily becoming more possible. I would like here to remind you of an earlier reference to still another triangle in which Leo is active, and to another of the great triangles conditioning humanity, Taurus, Leo, Aquarius. Well, how do we look at this? Well, it depends on what comes first. I mean, obviously, he's listing this in order of the signs. Taurus incites towards experience, the incentive, and towards the gaining of knowledge. So there's an accumulative factor always in Taurus, accumulation of knowledge, accumulation, well, how many C's do we need? Of knowledge in Taurus. Knowledge is that which expresses light, thus related to Taurus. Excuse me. Leo leads to the expression of that experience in daily life. Expression, yes. And to the effort to justify knowledge. In other words, is it true? True, applicable, useful? Will it really advance me and others? So Taurus accumulates experience. It's rich in experience. It is sensory. It relates to that which the senses reveal at first in the lower three worlds, and that's probably what we're talking about at first. I want to say that up here, towards the gaining of knowledge, I want to say knowledge which the senses confer. Not necessarily esoteric knowledge at first, although that can come later. Taurus, a very sensory, and also sensual, of course, but that's just a lower subset of it, a very sensory sign. Taurus, Ray 5, the five senses, and also, in a way, the sense of touch, as well as the sense of hearing. Aquarius takes that experience and the knowledge gained thereby and justified, you know, proven of value to the self, justified, i.e., proven of value to the self, the me, the I, and turns it to conscious use in the service of the group, turns it to conscious use in the service of the group. So we have a Leo, two triangles related. We have Leo, Libra, Capricorn over the long span of human history, and we have Taurus, Leo, Aquarius, from the time the man is mentally interested. So all knowledge will be put to use. See, let's just say Leo is knowledge put to use for the self and its elevation, improvement. And Aquarius is knowledge and experience put to use for the group in a wide generality. So here we've been looking at two related triangles, and the second one kicks in rather later in development and concerns the more mentally focused person. I mean, Taurus is acquisition. It can be acquisition of that which is desired, and that which is desired can be in the sensory realm, but it can also be acquisition of knowledge. Acquisition of knowledge, the storehouse of knowledge, and eventually the storehouse of usable qualities, the treasury of the causal body, connected with Taurus. For a long time, I wondered, you know, about that term justify. To me now, it means that this is knowledge which has real value to my particular self and is useful to me in advancing my personality or whatever identity I seem to have. Useful knowledge. There is a lot of the fifth ray connected with Leo as well, is there not? I mean, it's a constellation which brings in the fifth ray, just as Taurus through Venus brings in the fifth ray, and Aquarius brings in the fifth ray. So all of these have some fifth ray component. There's a fifth ray component in each, though planetary in the case of Taurus. All right, and so Taurus, in the final stage of development, demonstrates as illumined consciousness, and Leo produces the truly self-conscious man. Aquarius is the man of the spirit of life and of consecration to the divine expression. So this triangle, let's say, therefore, this triangle need not concern only the realm of knowledge, but can be interpreted on a higher turn of the spiral. Nice not to have to write that whole thing out. So illumined consciousness, at what stage? Well, they're all stages of illumination, but at least the third degree, and maybe even mastership. Can one begin to come into contact with the one about whom naught may be said at the fifth degree? One is an entered apprentice, in a way, in relation to Sirius. One is a first degree initiate. I'm going to ask this crazy question. Can one be a disciple of the Pleiades at the fifth initiation? Because that is really where the great illumination comes from. The Pleiades, in a sense, are the hub of the wheel and the center of our local one about whom naught may be said, and Taurus is intimately connected with them. So where does illumination stop? It doesn't. But in terms of a human being's illumination, it begins in earnest at the enlightenment initiation of the third degree. So Taurus is not just the acquisition of knowledge. It does lead to illumination. I suppose you can arrange these factors in the triangle in any order. You can arrange them Leo, Taurus, Aquarius. You can, yeah, well, it has to at least begin at the stage of knowledge. The truly self-conscious man, and notice he capitalizes self here, right? We have to notice that. Notice that DK, assuming his editors were careful, and that he indicated to Alice Bailey when something was to be emphasized, perhaps placed in capitals or italics. I don't know how that went in the dictation. But anyway, this is not just self-conscious. This is self-conscious. So the S, indicating the true higher self. And so man is a soul or a conscious triad, but at least a soul. Conscious within the causal body. Then Aquarius is the man of spirit. We might just say, not just the man of soul, of life, and of consecration to the divine expression of service, and that's to the monad. So there is a progression there. There is a progression from the third initiation through to the fifth. So from soul control to monadic control. And so what do we learn here? You know, we cannot interpret a triangle only on one level. It may have a particular application to this knowledge, accumulation of knowledge, justification of knowledge, group utilization of knowledge, but it also can lead to a higher expression, illumination. You know, the disciple of the second degree, where Taurus rules, has to have spiritual intelligence and mental illumination and spiritual intelligence. I believe that's how it went. Let me just check this. Spiritual and okay, well, let's do it this way. Mental illumination, spiritual intelligence. Avoiding the quotes, and let's just see. It is a quality of the second initiation, and it's in the Dyna books particularly. I think we'll go backwards here now. Oh, that's just two of two. Oh, that won't work. Try to go backwards and not succeed. Not succeed in going backwards. But in Dyna, well, you just have to take my word for it. There is this section about spiritual intelligence. And if I could just find it, I would feel happier. Ten, and maybe we'll find where it is. Oh, it's the illumined mind. That's why we're not going to have mental illumination. There it is, the very first one. An illumined mind and spiritual intelligence are the definite sign that a man can take the second initiation. While spiritual perception or intuitive instinct signifies preparedness for the transfiguration of the third. So there it is. It's in Dyna 2, page 267. So this can also, another mode of interpretation is Taurus, second initiation, which is illumined mind and spiritual intelligence. Leo, third initiation, which is true self-consciousness, and Aquarius, fourth or fifth, under the monad, under the impress of life, being, spirit, the divine. So what's the lesson to be learned here? It's a lesson about relativity. Something is stated as being applicable on one level, but it's always possible to reduce or to extrapolate to higher levels. When we study the seven rays, or the 14 rules, let's call them, and the seven initiations to which they pertain, these rules really apply beyond the third degree. That is the level about which they are really written, but there is a reduction, an anticipation of that level, which can be entered into or studied by those for whom the second degree is the immediate objective or who have passed that. And there are also, well, let's just put it like that. Yeah, there are probably higher initiations to which the different rules can refer. Each one of them is to refer to a particular initiation, or perhaps to the period leading up to the initiation, and the formulas relate to interim periods preceding initiations or following. DK has certainly given us enough pieces in this jigsaw puzzle to make the whole of it cohere, so we can understand from our present level of consciousness still more, and increase the acuity of that present level of consciousness. All right. It is here that the importance of the esoteric rulers can be seen. Now we have Taurus, and the sun veiling Neptune, and we have the Jupiter. So I suppose they would refer particularly to the higher consummations here. We have Vulcan for Taurus, sun veiling Neptune for Leo, and Jupiter for Aquarius. Yes, he has talked here about Right. At first, we have a lower expression, and then in the final stages of development, that's really what we're looking for. The esoteric ruler, or maybe the hierarchical ruler, will be important, but he seems to refer here to the esoteric ruler. True self-consciousness for Leo, truly self-conscious man, and the man of spirit. Sir Thomas More, an Aquarian, a man for all seasons, fourth degree initiate, play written about him, now a master. Perhaps the Sir Thomas in the initiate books. Maybe that would be the case. We'll know more as things progress. So it is here that the importance of the esoteric rulers can be seen. These triangles composed of three constellations are, according to cyclic law, dominated at any one time by one of the three, the other two being subordinate. Well, that's a major statement, which, of course, in a way he referred to in earlier, maybe using different words, but basically that's the story. These triangles composed of three constellations are, according to cyclic law, dominated at any one time by one of the three. Well, it depends on what stage you're in. If you're accumulating knowledge, you may seek somewhat to justify it and somewhat to serve, but accumulation is the main thing. If you're justifying knowledge under Leo, then the accumulation doesn't stop, nor does the application in the wider sense stop, but justifying it for yourself is the main thing. And if you are under Aquarius and you are utilizing knowledge for the group, the accumulation does not necessarily stop, nor does your personal justification of it, but using it in the group context is the main thing. And so we could go even in the final stages. Is illumination the main factor at the second degree? Okay. Is true self-knowledge, true knowledge to know, to express, to reveal, to destroy, to resurrect, is true knowing of the self under Leo the main thing? Or are you, in fact, the spirit with the illumination and self-knowledge subordinated to that? Are you, in fact, the man of spirit? Really expressing the universality factor. We might say universality, universality is expressed. The universality, finding oneself in everything, you know, all things to all men of the early Aquarian becomes the ability to identify with all situations and all beings and all human beings, and to feel oneself omnipresent. I think Aquarius has a lot to do with omnipresence and omniscience. Aquarius related to both omnipresence and omniscience. There is a knowledge factor, but there is also this distributive factor. It is the third sign, counting clockwise, hence related to the third ray. It's one of its rays. It distributes the self in all places. So that, of course, can lead to the lack of centralization, but later, after centralization has been achieved in Leo, it leads to omnipresence. It's not a scattered omnipresence, it's just the realization. It's a harmlessness, in a way, under universal love. The man who realizes himself to be everywhere, the very first requirement of harmlessness. The life expression, the expression of the life of the man who realizes himself to be everywhere. So the importance of the esoteric rulers, Vulcan, the Sun, Neptune, and Jupiter. All of them can be related to the heart of the Sun, interestingly. And to the heart and the head center, all of them. Vulcan, Neptune, and Jupiter, for sure. I just want to make that statement. Put it down, you know, nail it down a little bit. Vulcan, Neptune, and Jupiter all can be related to the heart and head center. And I've talked about that. You know, it's a 12-petaled lotus. It's a Sirius Jupiter, Leo Jupiter kind of thing. Jupiter relates to Pisces, 12th sign, Neptune, ruler of Pisces, in a special way, 12th sign, Vulcan, related to the heart of the Sun and also to the head center. So put it together, the heart of the Sun in the head center. And that's the major lotus there. I wonder how many petals Vulcan has as a planetary logos. Each one of the planetary logoi has a certain number of petals, we know. So these triangles are called in the archives of the masters, triangles in revolution. I was looking for that word. Actually, I've sometimes called it triangles in rotation. The triangles in revolution is better. Revolution is a bigger sort of idea because it involves two rather than just one. Rotation, you rotate on your own axis, but with revolution, you have to have some other factor around which you're revolving. At one time, one of the three constellations will be the controlling factor. At another time, another will swing into effectiveness, and later the third. And this applies as well. I've dealt with this in my commentaries on Cosmic Fire. Okay. So this, just get down here, applies as well to the triangulation of chakras in our etheric body. And this will be related to the monadic ray. That's myself, okay. Monadic ray, right. Will be related to the monadic ray. Sometimes I'm quite stubborn, you know, I could type the word faster, but I just want to get that particular little formula that will give me the more expanded word, because later, if I remember it, it will save time. I'll never forget OAW, one about whom not be said, or SSS, capitals, seven solar systems, of which ours is one. Those I will always remember, because, of course, they're the least practical, so naturally one should remember them. Okay, and later a third, and we have discussed the way different chakras are activated geometrically according to the major monadic ray. Maybe no need to repeat that, I mean, except I tend to do it, you know. And I just basically said that for all those three types, the point in the triangle which represents the type comes into expression sooner than that same point for those on a different monadic ray. And I worked that out, at least as it seems to be the case. A knowledge point is always first, but for the love type, love point emerges equally with the knowledge point. For the second ray type, per se, the love petal emerges rapidly, and the finality of the knowledge point is the most difficult. For the first ray type, It is the love that is least emergent, and the first-ray type point emerges faster than for any other type. And then for the third-ray type, monadically, it may be the sacrificial aspect, which is the slowest to emerge, and certainly the knowledge point will emerge fastest. Love next, and then finally the will point. We've been told that for first-ray monads, love is really hard to develop, so naturally the love point of any triangle would be the last to emerge. I wonder if you looked at the triangle of the solar plexus, sacral center, and base of the spine as sort of a 1-3-2 triangle ascending, and for the first-ray type of monad, it would be the solar plexus that would emerge slowest, in a way, or slower than the other types. The base of the spine might not come into full power before the sacral did, but it would come into fuller power than the base of the spine would for the earlier types. Fuller power earlier, we might say. Well, you can work that out. You can see how that works. Each in these turn pours its force through its esoteric ruler. And the other two energies become secondary importance. So let's just say the other two esoteric rulers are subsidiary to the esoteric ruler of the point in the triangle, which is ascendant. Doesn't mean the ascendant, but which is in the ascendant, you might say, or predominant, predominating. Okay. The nice thing about my bad typing is that, and my bad spelling, is that when I go to do that, you can think about any substance that was offered verbally. If something of interest was given, then you have a little more time to think about it while I correct my bad typing and bad spelling. Well, it's not really bad. It's just that I'm in a hurry. And there is no rush, no hurry, and yet there is no time to lose. Well, those are the rules of the road, but try to tell that to a person who has strong Aries type. When this information is connected with the teaching upon the rays, it will be apparent how necessary it is to know which of the triangles is the focal point of transmission, for any given ray. We're getting point near that tabulation on page 490, which gives the major constellation the constellation through which any ray flows majorly and for whom at this time. Because in this way it will be discovered which ray energy is in major or minor expression. Let's read that over again. When this information, well, each of these in turn, of these points in the triangle, pours through its esoteric ruler, and the other two energies become of secondary importance. We could look at any of the triangles for the rays, you know, like Aries, Leo, Capricorn for the first ray, which is in the ascendant, so to speak, which is predominant. And hence its esoteric ruler will be predominant. We'll get to that. We'll get to that in just a moment. But, you know, when you get to Gemini, Virgo, Pisces, which is in the ascendant, which is predominant, and its esoteric ruler then will be predominant over the others. When this information is connected with the teaching upon the rays, you know, the Ray 2 teaching and the Ray 3 teaching, rays and astrology, it will be apparent how necessary it is to know which of the triangles is the focal point of transmission, or which constellation in a particular triangle is the focal point of transmission for a ray. I mean, you've got to know which triangle carries what ray particularly, and it may carry more than one ray, one, two, or three rays, as presently given. But it's also necessary to know which sign, which constellation in that triangle of constellations is the main conduit for the ray in question. For instance, Aries presently may be the main conduit for the first ray, but first the seventh ray goes through Aries, but it's not the main conduit for the seventh ray. Capricorn is, even though 3 and 1 pass through Capricorn as well. Well, you know, all of that is part of memorizing the rays and the constellations through which they pass in order to gain a facility to relate these factors and group them in a way that will produce light. I see if we're still trying to pick up the pieces. You know, the magnets, well, I don't know if that's a good analogy. It's like the balls of mercury. I used to break thermometers when I was a kid. A nice thing for a Mercurian type to do, and all the little mercury balls would scatter all over, and I'd like to herd them together until they were close enough to coalesce. And that is the story of Mercury and the little pieces of knowledge which can coalesce into a revelation. So memory, you know, the third ray is the Lord of Memory, and Mercury is a major third ray planet monadically anyway, in my view. Mercury helps with that coalescing. It will be apparent how necessary it is to know which of the triangles is the focal point of transmission, because in this way it will be discovered which ray energy is in major or minor expression. Well, that is not a straightforward statement. It's a bit like that earlier statement in the book, which I don't even want to go back to because it's so perplexing. It's all about planets and rulers and signs. I won't go back to it, but it's in the beginning of the book, and it's trying to relate esoteric and exoteric rulers and the personality ray and the soul ray with the sign. At least those are the implications of the statement. This is a perplexing statement. It will be apparent how necessary it is to know which of the triangles is the focal point of transmission for a ray. Okay, because in this way we will discover which ray energy is in major or minor expression. Perhaps, if the members of the triangle are prominent or not especially so, then the ray energy working through that triangle will be in either major or minor expression. Now, another way of looking at this, but I'm not sure whether the words themselves justify this interpretation, but let's look at the fourth ray. It expresses itself majorly through Scorpio, but minorly through Taurus and Sagittarius. The triangle in revolution is showing that Scorpio is on top. So it's not so much that through the triangle as a whole, the fourth ray is in major or minor expression. I don't know how we could determine that. Scorpio is a very important sign today, and it's the major expression of the fourth ray. But we can determine which factors in the triangle, which constellations in the triangle, bring a ray energy through in major or minor expression. At least we can do that. We can determine in any triangle which constellation in the triangle brings the ray through in major or minor expression. That much we can, but I'm not sure whether what is said here is said in a different way, whether that is really what's being said. It will be apparent how necessary it is to know which of the triangles is the focal point of transmission. See, what I would do there to make sense of this for me, I would say which of the constellations in a triangle is the focal point for transmission at this time. They're all focal points in a way. But maybe this is because I know which constellations they are. Which of the triangles Because presumably, before a person reaches this, they don't really know what are the ray triangles. So they'd have to know which is the triangle for a particular ray, and DK is going to give them, because it is in this way, it will be in this way discovered, it isn't, because in this way it will be discovered, which ray energy is in major or minor expression, and that's the enigmatical part, to me, anyway. Maybe someone else has a better idea. That is the enigmatical part. Which ray energy it is in major or minor expression. When we look at a particular sign of the zodiac, constellation of the zodiac, it may be involved in more than one triangle. Mm-hmm. So let's say Aries is involved both in a first ray and a seventh ray triangle. When it is in the first ray triangle, it is also probably transmitting the seventh ray, but only majorly the first ray. We can get all kinds of understanding around this issue, but can we determine which is a predominant ray by the triangle through which it is expressing? So can we really determine which ray in any period is major or minor by looking at the triangle through which it is expressing? That is what Master DK says. Well, you know, the first ray is expressing through Aries, Leo, Capricorn. All of those constellations are really big now. I mean, are there any constellations which are not really big now? But Aries, Leo, Capricorn, Aries helping in impulsing the New Age, and Leo being part of that triangle as well, and Capricorn being a major transmission of the Pleiadian active intelligence energy to humanity as a whole. Those are potent, that's a potent triangle. Now, are there less potent triangles? Maybe this is, you know, what we're thinking of here. Are there less potent triangles in the present age which, because of their relative lack of potency, will show that the ray passing through them is not in major expression today? I think I'm getting closer. It takes a while. We could go through the triangles, and, you know, maybe while we're thinking about it, we should just a little bit. But, you know, are there any really weak points in a triangle, the constellations that are rather weak? Well, if we, you know, if we go through Gemini, Virgo, and Pisces, Pisces may be the only one that is relatively weak, but it's not weak, really, because we're in that Piscean age. And Gemini is potent for all those who are moving towards accepted discipleship from the probationary path. Virgo is bringing in, is it a weak triangle? Well, the second ray is so prominent, I don't know if we can. When we look at Cancer, Cancer, Libra, and Capricorn is the third ray triangle. All of them, for one reason or another, can be considered significant at this time. Can the sign Cancer? Well, the mass consciousness is very strong. We look at Taurus, Scorpio, and Sagittarius. Maybe Sagittarius has an application only to some who are aspiring. Scorpio, everyone's fighting it out. Taurus, the spirit of acquisition is very strong, but how strong is illumination? Is the fourth ray triangle strong? Because here's the thing. The fourth ray at the present time is not strong, at least in terms of humanity. So is there a hint in this fourth ray triangle that would tell us that the fourth ray working through that triangle is in a minor expression? Pretty soon it will be in a major expression. But then we talk about major or minor, we could be talking about cycles. Not just whether the thing is present, can be present, the ray can be present in a minor or present in a major expression. Well, you get the idea. You know, Leo, Sagittarius, Aquarius, is it weak? Is it strong? Well, it's got two factors that are very strong. Sagittarius, maybe not so much. Six-ray triangle of Virgo, Sagittarius, and Pisces. It's weakening, perhaps. Is it in a major cycle? Well, it's certainly going out, and Virgo is strong. What about the seventh ray? Coming in very strongly. Aries is strong, Cancer for the mass, and Capricorn for advanced humanity, coming in very strongly. Does this method work? That's the question. Because it is an enigmatical statement, because it, in this way, see, it will be apparent how necessary it is to know which of the triangles is the focal point of transmission for any particular ray, because, now that's good, but then, because in this way it will be discovered which ray energy is in major or minor expression. That's the key, of course. Well, okay, friends, you know, I've been getting into speculation about certain relationships which DK has presented, and for which the interpretation is not immediately straightforward, and I've been revealing my faulty thinking process in these things, but okay, at least I'm attempting to gain some light on the subject. Where we are now, really, is the end of Esoteric Astrology Adventure 124E, page 488, and we're going to begin with Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 125A at 488. We've got five programs on this. That's a lot, and I don't like to convert anything larger except if I absolutely have to, so that the people with the Mac computer can also see it, and so it's not a horrendously large download. You know, what are we doing here? I am attempting to think through this book and to speak it in terms of the associations that come to me, and I'm hoping that my thinking process stimulates the thought in the listener, you the listener, so that you can say, well, look, I agree, I disagree, this seems to lead nowhere, this seems to lead somewhere, and elaborate with your own thought, fill in the blanks, fill in the things that I've missed, reconstruct some of the forms that I have put here. You can do it, and this will be developing over the next century, and we'll see how long this particular commentary, exhaustive and exhausting, not really exhaustive, of course. DK couldn't consider it exhaustive. He has not dealt with the science of triangles exhaustively because he just can't, given our receptive capacity and the time limit, Saturnian time limit, in which he had to work. No way to do it. Wouldn't have been profitable. But at least I'm trying to expand upon the seeds of thought that he has dropped and relate them to other factors in our consciousness and knowledge, so that it may come, oftentimes come, closer to home for us. So we'll leave that be now, and we'll start a little bit later with Esoteric Astrology Adventure. Oh, I must be anticipating, and I keep on writing 135, don't I wish? 134, 135. Still 200 pages to go of commentary, and we have done approximately 490. Which means we're two-thirds of the way through the book, and we'll see how it can be used. Okay, everybody, thank you, and we'll talk to you soon.